What local bands did you like at that time? Late '60s, early '70s.
The ones that say local bands that I like. Well, we had came up in the '50s with the Morticians, and we also had those that I heard at the high school.
You mean in the '60s?
Yeah, yeah, in the '60s, and then in the '70s there was, you know, I really enjoyed Pepperfog. They were a good band. Joker's Wild, The Litter was good. Good show and musicianship, I thought.
Mm-hmm. You're a drummer, Rick. Were there any drummers that impressed you?
You know, there was one drummer that really impressed me, and unfortunately I don't remember the gentleman's name, but he was instrumental in really getting me out of music. And the reason I say that is because he told me that he had one time had a knee injury, and he went every single day down to the drums and tried to play, and he couldn't. And as soon as he could, he spent at least 8 hours a day practicing. And I thought to myself, if I don't have that kind of drive, I'm fooling myself to think that I will ever be that kind of a professional musician. And I wish I remembered the gentleman's name because he was an excellent drummer. Hmm. And also the drummer for The Litter, which I forgot his name, was just...
Tom Murray?
Don't remember that. Yeah. Could have been.
That name rings a bell.
Yeah, he had a great... He went and saw Emerson, Lake and Palmer. And he said, he explained to me what he saw from Palmer. And he said, now you and I both know, if we have this concept of what we could play on the drums, if we, everything fit and was perfect, he said, Palmer's drumming starts there and goes way beyond what we could even conceive. So that was what I enjoyed and what I listened to around town.
Billy, what about you? Any local bands that impressed you?
Yeah, I remember, again, the first band being totally blown away by the Jagsmen, who eventually became the Sir Rallies. I remember just being a Mike Comer fan. And at that time, you know, everybody in our, we attempted to be heavy, but we really weren't. But certainly I love the Jokers, but I didn't see people perform that much because we would be performing. And to this day, everybody loves Pepperfog. I love the Jokers. I remember seeing The Litter play. I think they were a little over my head. Loved Crow.
You guys covered a Crow song, right?
Yeah, we did. We did Evil Woman. I think it seems to me I remember we did Shrum Shiny Day Baby too. I think we tried doing that, but as far as guitar players, I mean, everybody in town knows and loves Lonnie Knight. I remember Zippy Kaplan being totally impressed by him. Dale Strength is and all of these guys still play They're incredible. The thing that that I remember is when I would listen to those guys play, I always thought that they were like 1,000 times better than me. And now when I hear recordings of them, they're only 100 times better than me. So I'm a lot better than I thought I was. But those guys, and then Jeff Beshear, who played with Chesterfield Gathering, I hated these guys. I mean, they could sound like, believe me, when we did Whole Lotta Love, it was a step or two down. And then when I'd hear some of these guys doing it, I'm thinking I'm listening to Jimmy Page. And I used to blame it on my guitar. I still have that guitar. I thought, how could I possibly be expected to sound like Lonnie Knight when I'm playing this piece of crap, and he's playing through a Marshall stack, and all I've got is this Beetle top and two Sovereign bottoms, and they've got all of these pedals, and all I've got is this Mosrite fuzz tone, and so it's not me, it's my equipment. Well, when we were playing down in Rochester, I was leaving the band and was in my 2 week, grace period or whatever. We played down in at a rock festival in Rochester. It was underneath that big corn tower, and Lonnie was there, and he was doing like a James Taylor set. So here's this big rock festival, and there's Lonnie playing acoustic guitar and singing, I've seen fire and I've seen rain and all that type of stuff. And I don't know if you guys had offered him the job replacing me or whatever, but we're doing our big closing song, and I'm looking over to the side of the stage, and there's Lonnie standing there. So I thought, hey. And I handed Lonnie my blonde Gibson 335, and I left. My God. There was my guitar sounding just like Jimmy Page. My guitar, my amp, and I'm out there going, what is my excuse now?
Yeah.
And I mean, it was just ungodly good. Mm. So it's a bad carpenter who blames his tools. I learned that.
So when you guys look back at this time period, late 60s, early 70s, the Thunder Tree era, is there one particular moment that sticks out or one concert that you recall that you really enjoyed or any really good memory that you have of that time period?
Well, I could never narrow it down to one because we had all sorts of good times, and it was a thrill to play with Johnny Winter. And I remember when it came time to do my solo in I'm a Man, and I all of a sudden I'm doing the best I can, and I'm going out there and all of a sudden I thought, oh my God, Johnny Winter is here. And I looked over, and there's Johnny Winter off to the side of the stage watching me play, and he is grooving and smiling, and you know, and I thought, hey. so that I went back and finished my thing there. But that was certainly a highlight. And I also remember when we played at the Depot with Rotary Connection, and Minnie Riperton was not Minnie Riperton; she was the singer for Rotary Connection. And I remember we were upstairs in the dressing room, which was the office above there. And I remember they were standing there making fun of Minneapolis and saying, I don't see any cows in the streets. And they were going, I wonder if there's a bunch of farmers down there. And they were just really bad-mouthing the place and the club. And then all of a sudden, the guy who ran the Depot at the time, I do not remember his name, said, oh, by the way, he says, you guys, they don't want to share the dressing room with you. So we had to go down the hall and change clothes in the closet where they kept the mops and the brooms. And then we went down and did our set. And when we were doing the drum solo, one of the things, this is pre-effects, you know, before people had, you know, electronic things. And one of the cool, really neat things that we used to do is when Ricky would be doing his drum solo, people always thought of Thunder Tree, Ricky was like the best musician in there. People would always talk about Thunder Tree, the drummer for Thunder Tree. I think he was nominated for a Connie Award. But anyway, and so we used to, Jeff and I used to blow into Ricky's drums so that when you would blow into the drum and it's enclosed, so the drum would go, and we used to do that. That was part of our gig, is, you know, everybody would get it, he'd solo and they'd solo and solo, then we'd get turned over to Ricky and we'd all run off, and Jeff and I would come running on and blow in his drums. And
you have to make some device to
we just blow through the
heads would go up and down, so the sound of the drum would actually go up and down because they were blowing, you know.
And there's that little hole, hole in there, right, where the air goes in and out
on the side.
Yeah, and we would blow in there, and then the drum head would tighten up, and so as we would blow in, it would do
it would alter the sound.
Oh, right.
And so Ricky, so Jeff Man and I,
effects.
Yeah. So Jeff and I, he was off to his side, and I was off to my side, and we signaled each other, and we both go running on stage, and start blowing Ricky's drums, and I'm thinking that it's not having as much effect tonight as it normally has, but, you know, and then Ricky would be, you know, wailing away, and he'd be yelling at something. Well, I couldn't hear because there's a drum in my ear, and people are beating on it, and I couldn't hear what he was saying. What he was saying is that he had removed the drum heads, the bottom drum heads. And so we were blowing into nothing. And I imagine the people who hadn't seen us before were wondering, why are those two guys sucking on his drums? And what is wrong with them? And also, I know I'm monopolizing this, but also I remember one time Thunder Tree played at the New Prague Prom, of all things. And And Ricky, we were doing, you know, can you imagine playing Inagata De Vida at a prom? And well, we did. And there's Ricky doing his drum solo. And, you know, sometimes, you know, drummers, when they, you know, get going, they kind of click their sticks together or whatever like that, and they're, you know, and it's just not going as well as you would like. And well, Ricky has a temper, okay? So Ricky would get there, and then he'd kind of, nobody else notices this, but he does. I mean, they all think that there's this fabulous drum solo going on, and Ricky's having what he considers to be problems, and he starts throwing sticks, and all of a sudden he got up and he took his cymbal and threw it out in the crowd. And I ran out in the crowd and got the cymbal and was putting it back up there. And then by the time I got there, he picked up his hi-hat and threw that out in the crowd. So I ran after the hi-hat and I picked up the hi-hat and got that back there and got him back to playing again. So I went around behind the stage, and well, I noticed that the riser was vibrating apart, and right next to the crack between the two risers is Ricky's drum stool leg. And it's going closer and closer. Plus, he's already angry about this thing. And so finally, as a big finale, Ricky, and just as he did that, the drumstick or the chair fell into the crack. But I was back there and caught him as he goes
Ah.
totally back.
You saw it. You saw it coming.
I could see it coming, and I didn't want to get in his way, but and people thought it was part of the act.
Rick, what about you? Any special memories of Thunder Tree?
Well, I really liked when we did the thing in Rochester with the radio show. I found fun to do. And the what I liked when we again played that concert that we had held and we'd promoted ourselves was the fact that we had made a little more than we normally had made, and it was all on our name. Because normally you play like proms and you play clubs, and it's because people come to the club, and it may be you didn't necessarily. We had a following in some areas, but we packed the place, and it was a lot of fun, and it was because of our name and what we had done with the radio show. So I really enjoyed. That was one thing that you was self-promoting, and they came here to actually see Thunder Tree. And there were other places, of course, like Billy had said, that we have done that with. And the strangest thing that I ran into for some reason or other was when we played at places and kids would come up, you're talking 12, 13, 14-year-olds, and they would ask for autographs. And I'm going, what on earth would you want my autograph for? First of all, you can't pronounce Leah Bratton once I write it. Why do you want? So I felt very uncomfortable. And you, so what do you say? Good luck, you know, you have bad taste for wanting my, you know, I mean, what do you do? But it was just, it was a kind of a good news, bad news. It was great to have somebody ask you for your autograph. But then you, on the other side of you goes, why are you asking me for my autograph? I'm nobody special. So that was what I remember the most, was that we actually generated that business by our own efforts, and I really liked that. And it was a packed room. And
So,
Pepperfog was the one that went back, you know, they were the warm-up band, and they did a wonderful job too, and I enjoyed listening to them too.
okay, so bring us up to date, just kind of briefly, Rick. After Thunder Tree, did you go on to other bands?
Yeah, I for a while I was a musician on the road with a band called Showcase, and just trying to make a living, basically. That was where you'd go, you were on the road, and you came back like 2 weeks a year, and you played across like from down to Iowa, across Illinois, Ohio, and then went up even to Maine. And then the second time I was with the same band, because I left for a while and came back. Then we went down south, which was a real cultural experience, going and playing in Arkansas and Louisiana and down south. Then came back and just played in club bands, and tried to got it with a weekend band when I was actually found a job that I could work during the day to make actual money. And just to probably about 3 and a half years ago, I really kind of stopped playing on weekends because I'm playing for, first of all, the band didn't necessarily learn the real contemporary stuff, so triggered it to saying we really should call our band Music by Dead Guys, because we play, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan, we play Elvis, you know, we play Roy Orbison and all that stuff. And go, well, first of all, the logo is going to be macabre, so why do that? And we just, nobody was really promoting the band to get the jobs. And we'd play a VFW here and there, and there were like 9 people at the bar would kind of wave when we'd play, and it just was no longer any fun. He didn't play often enough. He played maybe once a month. So you can't keep up your skills. And I'd get a hoarse voice every night when I was singing, because at the time I'd be singing like 60% of the songs. And so it just became less fun.
Okay.
And so I think now if I, you know, when I practice drums, it's to get exercise because it's very good exercise. And eventually I want to go back and get voice lessons and maybe do some other kind of singing.
Billy.
Yes. Well, after Thunder Tree, I did a couple of solo albums. I wanted to stay in music. I did an album called Persephone, and I recorded that whenever I could save up enough money to cover a session. And I released that on my own label back in probably 73. And again, that was Persephone. And
what label was that on?
It was my own record label. It was called Orion Records.
And just for the record, Persephone means what?
Well, Persephone was the goddess of the underworld, or she was the daughter of Demeter, and Hades, the god of the underworld, kidnapped mm-hmm. Persephone, brought her underground, and that's when the Demeter would pine for her daughter, and that would be the fall and the winter months, and then Persephone could spend 6 months of the year with her. It's probably longer than you cared for, but anyway, she was the goddess of the underworld, and there was a song in there where I'm referring to hell and ghosts and goblins, etc. And so I came up with the name Persephone.
So it was kind of your happy period.
Is yeah, that what you're... yeah. It was all A material and all up tempo.
I am.
In fact, Ricky and Rick Miller played and Tom Hatcher. On a couple of cuts where I used a whole band, they played and Ricky did some.
I guess I have to ask you about this artwork. Where did it originate and what does it mean?
Well, it is. There was a local artist. His name was William Stilley, and I had seen some of his work, and he did a lot of ink drawings and things. And I played the song for him and told him what I envisioned for the album cover. He did an ink drawing of that, and you know, if you look on the internet and things like that, there are places around the world that, you know, think of this as a kind of a neat album, and they're probably as much inspired by the album art as much as the music on there. I went to a record convention many years ago and was going through all of these old records, and somebody had one of my Persephone albums. A collector had had an album in there. He had a sticker on it that said "Weird Folky Stuff."
okay.
But then I also then several years later, I did an album called Travelin', and that was on a small local label called Mill City Records. A friend of mine by the name of Al Heigl basically produced that. Did a lot of solo shows and promoted those for several years. And then my friend, Kevin Odegaard and I worked together. In fact, when I released Travelin', then I joined him in the KO band, and we played around town for a while. I left the KO band and played with another bar band called Cimarron, got married and kind of went away from music for a while. And one of the hockey dads and I, who I still play with today, we started with a group called Perfectly Loud. You know, did two, four nights a month type of thing. And since then, I've reunited with Kevin a number of times in the KO band reunions. We also play together in a configuration called Blood on the Tracks Live. We get together and do, a couple of shows a year, do a Dylan tribute. And we still record a little bit. I still write. I haven't recorded any of my stuff in an awful long time, but I still write and sing. Mark and I from Perfectly Loud, we now do, we do a folk duo type of thing, and mm-hmm. and we also, we play from time to time with other musicians and stuff. But primarily my main focus is on Blood on the Tracks Live, and we work with a charity called Guitars for Vets.
Okay, Rick and Billy, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you for having us.
It was fun, thanks.
Thank you. The preceding interview was recorded on September 18th, 2011, at Sunrise Sound in Rogers, Minnesota, and was produced by Danny Johnson and Tom Campbell. So people say your man is made out of mud. Home man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood. Skin and bone, well, my dad's weak and a back that's strong.
up my shovel and walk to the mine, loaded 16.